Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, Crash Course in Music, One Band at a Time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we've got another intro here for another supporter, another backer, another sponsored episode. We love these because it means you're enjoying what we do enough to help support the show. And our special guest, once again, is Joe Acosta. Hi, Joe.
Hey there, guys.
Good to have you back here.
Yeah. Does this set a record? I know you don't have guests on, but...
I think you might be our most returning guest. Hammond, is that about...
We've got a couple. Right, Daniel and his wife come on a lot. And I think Joe's up there with them. And then Emig, Peter.
Peter
Emig, comes on a lot, too. Yeah. So I think it's a three-way tie at this point. So,
oh, yeah, we might have to find out, see who's in the running. Because that spurring up a little competition never hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, you're here because you are supporting us at the Patreon level that allows you to program one of our episodes every season. And can you tell us who you are going to make us listen to?
I am asking you guys to spend a week listening to Foo Fighters, or The Foos, as I refer to them, because I keep saying The Foo Fighters, even though I know that's wrong.
Right. But if you say The Foos, that probably allows it, right? Like that makes it okay to say the instead in front of their name?
I wasn't an English major in college, but I'm going to guess that yes, and that's what I'm sticking to that. I also stick to GIF and...
good. I approve of all of these things wholeheartedly. Foo Fighters. I'm excited about this because I consider myself a fan of Foo Fighters, but I don't necessarily feel like I know the full width and breadth of their music, right? Like it's I know of course all the hits, Everlong and Monkey Wrench and Big Me and stuff like that. I don't know how many of their deeper cuts I'm familiar with. And so this is going to be a really exciting one for me. Hammond, how about you?
I'm kind of in the same boat. I know hits and I know they covered one song that I'm really excited about. But other than that, I'm real fresh coming in.
Nice. That's going to be great. What made you pick Foo Fighters?
You know, I kind of view the Foos or Foo Fighters as like the Who or the Rolling Stones in terms of longevity, to classic rock, what modern rock and roll is. I mean, I've been listening to them since their first album. Was following Dave Grohl when he was back with Nirvana and Pat as well. I mean, they kind of came out of an underground punk scene that was huge up and down the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, it's been, the albums have just been coming. It's a little, you know, the music has definitely changed in terms of, you know, my love is still for those very early albums. And but it's, you know, it's a band that I think Dave Grohl will probably try and produce music until the day that he drops dead, you know, behind the producer console.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool that you bring up stuff like The Who and The Stones, because we tend to separate what we traditionally call classic rock from modern rock. I mean, obviously, classic rock, modern rock, different time periods. But at some point, that line has to move. You know, it can't always be everything before 1980 is classic rock and everything since is modern rock or 85 or whatever. That line has got to move. And I think the Foos got me doing it. I think they would qualify as maybe not necessarily a classic rock band in the sense of being around as long as those other bands, but certainly belong in the same breath, getting mentioned in the same breath as The Who and The Rolling Stones, just for their longevity, their amazing output, their great music, and you know, a band that I'm surprised we haven't seen a Super Bowl halftime show from Foo Fighters, have we?
No.
I don't think we have.
I don't think so.
They're due. They're absolutely due.
Because that Weird Al has to go first, but yes, I agree with you.
Oh man, do you think the Super Bowl could handle Weird Al Yankovic? Actually, you know what? They totally could. But I don't know. I argue Foo's first.
Okay, so my thought with the Foo Fighters is that aren't they technically and officially the first post grunge band?
I guess. I mean, they're certainly the first band to come from one of those, the breakup of another grunge band.
Breakup's a bit harsh. Ouch.
Well,
yeah, I mean, it was there certainly that there was a.
So, what, too soon, Hammond? Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No. I think if they weren't the first, they definitely were the longest lasting thereafter. I mean, I think that there were definitely bands like Stone Temple Pilots that transitioned from the late grunge era through into pop music. But then again, it's Scott Weiland, passed away because of his issues. So, I mean, I think I really feel like there was, and when I've watched documentaries, when I've heard interviews with Grohl and other members of the band, I think they really, because they had their own drug issues, their drummer had his substance abuse issues. And I think that they just, having gone through that trauma and seeing the effect that mental health and drugs use, abuse and alcohol abuse can have on people that they cared about, I think that they were much more cautious. And I think that they when they realized that they were heading down a similar path themselves as a band, they essentially intervened and were able to self-correct.
Straighten themselves out. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. I like that. And obviously as we go through their backstory and their history, we'll get a lot of that stuff. Some of which I didn't even know about. So that's going to be really, really cool. What's your favorite memory associated with Foo Fighters? Have you ever gotten to see them in concert?
It was ages ago. It was in the, I haven't been much of a concert goer, since the late 90s. I do remember having seen them, at the Palladium, which was a really, really small venue and a great venue to just go and work your way up to the front of the stage and just get completely overpowered, sonically. Mm-hmm. So that was, one of my memories. I think I saw them at a Weenie Roast event, which were summertime concerts that our local alternative rock station would do every year. But I think one of my best memories is just cruising one summer in the early 2000s with the 1x1 album. It lived in my CD player, and just being able to cruise down Pacific Coast Highway and the coast with the windows open and just rocking out to that great album that just was track after track after track, and it was those are the kind of memories that I still love.
Yeah. Oh, there's nothing better than having an album that you associate with a time in your life, an event, a road trip. Road trips are the best. Like if you connect an album with a road trip, then you're just going to get to relive that every time you hear that album. There's a couple like that for me that will always be forever connected to.
Or a train trip.
A train trip. Did I talk about that?
Yeah, you've talked about that every episode. Well, you cover that Posies thing a lot.
That's hilarious. Okay, I didn't know how many times I brought that up, but I guess it's a lot. Okay, yes, the train trip. I listen to Posies, Dear 23. Okay, all right. Hey, we've all got our dream theaters. excellent. Well, what was I going to ask next? So what songs should we be looking for? Obviously the hits. Do you have a favorite that,
everything, I mean, the early stuff, everything off of Color and Shape and for me, their music, the early stuff is so closely associated with those wild videos that they were doing. For me, the videos, just like it was with Boingo, it was, that's what attracted me first to the band, I think more so even than listening to the albums. And it was these visuals. I love I love anything they do acoustic. The Skin and Bones album is a terrific example of just that ability to capture live, ability to capture reformat their original songs in a way that and reinvent them. You know, it's they can get a little formulaic. I mean, that's the one thing about the Foos is Foo Fighters is once you hear, once you get the formula down, if you spend it, you know, album to album to album, you start to get a little bored with the formula. Mm-hmm. But every once in a while, they break that, and that's pretty, and that's always fun for me. Is just hearing there's a certain, you know, the tempo that gets, you know, they when the song comes in with just, you know, simple guitars, and then you hear the drums come in, and then you start hearing Grohl growling and singing, and it's like, okay, that's your formula, that works, and that pumps me up.
Oh yeah, and you mentioned the videos. I'd completely forgotten about Everlong. That was directed by one of my favorite directors, Michael Gondry, who did not The Unbearable Lightness. What was it called? The Jim Carrey movie where he forgets. He goes
Sunshine
to
Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Eternal something? Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Exactly. Thank you. Apparently, I went to that service and had that title removed from my brain. But he directed a bunch of stuff like Bjork and Sibamato and stuff like that I really like. Their Big Me ripoff or parody of the Mentos commercials is great. Learning to Fly. Oh yeah, this is
Learning to Fly is my first introduction to Jack Black and Tinashe C.
Yeah, really? Cool. So I wonder if there's a way when I listen to these, if I can have it automatically put in the music videos for anywhere there are available, right? Just go album to album. But then as soon as I get to a track where there happens to be a music video, because I'm looking through the list of other music videos, there's a lot I haven't seen. I haven't seen the low, looks like Night Vision video or Next Year, really early one there. I'll Stick Around, Times Like These.
They do a video called White Limo that has got Lemmy in it as and it's shot like a student video on VHS, and it's just irreverent. But you know, Lemmy is this limo driver that's just driving around picking up the different band players in these different scenarios, and it's just fun.
Oh, that's great. Okay, can't wait for that. Yeah, definitely going to have to make watching their videos part of this experience for sure.
I'm glad you have time for that, Brian.
Well, I know. Do I? That is the question. Maybe I don't.
Just set up an iPad while you're on the recumbent bike and just,
there we go.
Just let the videos run on YouTube.
Perfect. I love it. It's absolutely what I'll do. Excellent. What's one thing do you want people to know going into this episode?
I'd say that, you know, there's different phases to this band, and you don't have to like everything that they put out in 2017 the same way as you do in 1997. You know, it's when you've been producing music that long, things are going to change. Mm-hmm. I personally, you know, my wife was telling me to turn it off when I was trying to listen to one of the later albums, because it was just grinding on her and it was grinding on me a little bit. But it was, you know, I don't think that disqualifies the band as being a great musician, a great set of artists, if everything doesn't touch you the same way.
Makes sense. Yeah. You know, and that just also remind me, somebody I know saw them in concert while Dave Grohl was, I guess, after he had broken his leg or something. And he actually had a rig on stage that would move him around the stage, almost like a dumbwaiter kind of thing, that would move him around the stage so that they could still put on the show and not have him kind of stationary in one place, but have him pushed all around the stage during the show is great.
Oh, the things, the antics they get up to in their concerts, again, it's worth a YouTube search and digging down everything from inviting people up to the out of the audience to come and play along with them on some of the greatest hits to and there's an amazing cover of them doing Bohemian Rhapsody with their drummer fronting. There is, you know, it's a band that just loves music. It's, I mean, Dave Grohl has had an impact. I mean, he was He does side projects with everybody from, every type of artist.
Metallica, Tenacious D,
Ghost, wow. Zach Brown.
Bands we've, that's go. Right. Yeah. Bands we've talked about here on the show. Well, fantastic. Well, Joe, thank you so much, man. I'm really excited about this week and looking forward to all the stuff we're going to be listening to. Do you have a Twitter feed or anything you want to send people to nothing find out to more
plug.
About you?
Nothing to plug right now, but okay. Thanks guys. I appreciate it.
Oh man. Our pleasure. Thanks so much, Joe. And, we'll get into that show right now. Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And we just heard from Joe, who gave us our challenge this week, our marching orders as a patron of Soundography. He had us listening to Foo Fighters. Can we have a prediction of how many times either one of us say the Foo Fighters on this episode?
I think it's going to be an over-under of about 6.
Okay. Oh, 6 is good. That's good. I'll take the under, but just barely. I was going to say 5. So I think that's probably pretty close. But again, big thanks to Joe for supporting the show and giving us Foo Fighters as a band to listen to this week. The albums, I think we came away from this kind of agreeing with a lot of his thoughts and his ideas about Foo Fighter music and listening to one album. One right after another.
And it's funny, there have been a few bands that have fallen into that where they're great bands, mm-hmm. but piling on like that, it starts to wear. I find now, especially with some of these other ones we've covered and now Foo Fighters, is that having their songs come up in shuffle, mm-hmm. far more enjoyable than just an onslaught of fighting.
One album right after another. Fighting. One fight right after another. You know, even listening to one solid album at a time, great. And I love Foo Fighters, and I'm still a fan of Foo Fighters. But listening to one album right after another does start to show you some of the tricks, the well that they constantly dip into. And it's a good well, but it's a recognizable well.
Yeah. His well of tricks is as deep as Alan Parsons, mm-hmm. but very different.
Interesting. I like that. Like that comparison a lot. Well, let's get into it. Foo Fighters were formed in Seattle in 1994 by Dave Grohl, initially as a one-man act after the suicide of his Nirvana cohort, Kurt Cobain.
The band name actually came from the pilots in the Allied forces called UFOs or other various weird things that they spotted while they were in the air during World War II.
Now, were the pilots Foo Fighters or were the UFOs?
It was the objects they saw. So if they saw really? Something weird in the air, they called it a Foo Fighter instead of a bogey or as whatever it was, or even a UFO, it was called a Foo Fighter.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So I always assumed that it was the pilots were the Foo Fighters, but no. It's just, and that doesn't count, people. I just said the Foo Fighters and it doesn't count. But so they're referring to the UFOs themselves as Foo Fighters. Okay. So like you've got your regular fighters they're the pilots are running around, they're fighters, but then you've got these, ooh, that's a Foo Fighter.
Yeah, exactly. You have no idea what it is, so it's a Foo.
Gotcha, which is like a nonsense, goofy mm-hmm. word. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that totally makes sense. All right, I like that. Prior to the release of their debut album, Grohl was listed only as the only member of the group. For the album Foo Fighters, which came out in 1995, Nate Mendel played bass, William Goldsmith was on drums, Pat Smear, who had been a touring guitarist with Nirvana, played guitar. Dave wrote songs while on tour with Nirvana, but held him back because of his awe and respect for Kurt as a songwriter. And in 1992, he released a cassette of demos called Pocket Watch under the name Late.
And I could not find any of those to listen to. I was kind of interested.
Yeah.
Maybe my Google Foo wasn't strong enough, but I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. And I wonder which of those songs that were on his demo, if any, made it onto that first album. Probably had to be at least a couple of them, I would assume.
I'm willing to bet almost all of them.
Yeah, interesting. As I mentioned, in 1995, the debut album Foo Fighters came out. With little exception, Grohl played every instrument and sang all the songs on the album. He completed an album's worth of work in just 5 days. And he says, "So, since I'd recorded the first record by myself playing all the instruments, but I wanted people to think that it was a group, I figured that Foo Fighters might lead people to believe that it was more than just one guy. Silly, huh?" End quote. Continuing, Grohl insisted that a more appropriate name could have been chosen. Quote, "Had I actually considered this to be a career, I probably would have called it something else because it's the stupidest effing band name in the world." End quote. I didn't read ahead, and I almost said the F word, and I caught myself.
You almost pulled a Bridget?
Almost pulled a Bridget, yes. Well, no, Bridget would have just done it. That reading that, though, makes me wonder, I wonder if there are any bands that have publicly admitted that had they given a little bit more thought, they would have picked a different name for their band. Or is it something that you give your band a name, and then you just say, you dig both feet in and say, "Yep, that's our name, and I'm proud of our name, and I'm happy we picked it." And
I'm pretty sure that if there's one band having thought about or having known the future of SEO, mm-hmm. that the band The would have done something different.
For sure. Yeah, Matt Johnson did not have any idea what Google or Bing or Alta Vista even would be when he decided to name the band The. It's a bummer, too. That's one of my favorite bands, and it's next to impossible to find songs I haven't heard, or like what's going on with the band, because you Google the and Google says, "Oh, did you mean the anything else?" Here are other things that begin with the word the that are like everything else in the world.
Yeah, it's very true. The I'm wondering if any of those bands that have the double thing, like talk. If Google spits out, "Did you mean talk about sex?"
Sure. Duran Duran probably is pretty happy about it.
Yeah, theirs is pretty easy. Yeah.
Actually, we found an article from New Media Express. Jimmy Eat World is not happy about their name.
Of course not.
Arctic Monkeys don't like that. Don't like their name. There might have been other ideas for offshoots at the time, but the Monkees was the first one. It sounded like a first band name, doesn't it? It's so bad that the tribute bands don't sound worse. Foo Fighters, Mumford & Sons. Wow. Well, geez, I mean, come on. That's I can't even imagine Mumford & Sons.
But it's Rick Mumford and his kids, right?
I think so, exactly. And Smashing Pumpkins, not happy with their name choice either.
Yeah, but despite all their rage, they are still
right cage. Oh, jeez. Yeah. And it really wasn't Billy Corgan that didn't like it. It was Darcy Retzky, bassist, that didn't like it. So and Billy doesn't like her anyway, so that makes that easy. After finding the lineup, the band debuted in February of 1995. The first single was "This Is a Call," and then they released "I'll Stick Around," "For All the Cows," and "Big Me." Big Me to talk about it, I could stand to prove. If we can get around it, I know that it's true. Well, I talked about it, carried on, reasons only. I love the song "Big Me," but I'm guessing that it's like Radiohead's "Creep." It's probably one that they don't want to do a lot. They want to, because it's a very different sound for them. But it's mm-hmm. It's such a power pop. I don't know. I'd call it a power pop masterpiece. Mm-hmm.
It's in the same ilk as some of those early Blink and Green Day songs.
I think so. Yeah, they're more poppy. That didn't really give a good indication what the band's sound was going to be like. During the recording for the second album, Goldsmith quit. Grohl recorded the drums for the album. Later, Smear would leave, but he would return in 2011.
Grohl stated that he wanted the drums to sound a certain way on the album, and Goldsmiths just weren't having that sound. Huh. So Dave recorded them all, and Goldsmith felt betrayed, and so he took his drumsticks and went home.
Wow. I'm done. I'm leaving. This album, this group is never going to go anywhere.
Had a dumb name.
Yeah, dumb name.
Should have a "the" in front of it.
Right. In 1997, they released the album The Color and the Shape. Taylor Hawkins and Franz Stahl replaced the two departed members. The singles were Monkey Wrench, Everlong, My Hero, and Walking After You. They recorded Walking After You for the X-Files movie and a song called A320 for Godzilla. A B-side from the My Hero single was called Dear Lover, and that was used for the film Scream 2.
So many good people fell prey to that Godzilla movie.
Yeah, it pretty much could have launched the career, the frontman career of Hank Azaria. You know, instead of just being Simpsons voice guy and dog walker on Mad About You and a lot of great behind the scenes stuff. But if that movie would have done well, I think we would have seen Hank Azaria be a, maybe not an A-list celebrity, but he would have been in the top billing for a lot of future movies. It's too bad because
and the soundtrack roped in a lot of big names.
It did.
With mediocre results.
Yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. That
I'm looking at Led Zeppelin and P. Diddy.
Did they have
that mashup of Kashmir?
Oh, right. That was on there. I forgot about that. Yeah, and Wallflowers, I think, had something on there as well. Stahl was fired before the start of work on the third album, which was 1999's There Is Nothing Left to Lose. The album spawned several singles, including Learn to Fly, which was the band's first single to reach the Billboard Hot 100. And I think one of my favorite videos of all time. You've got Dave Grohl playing about.
Is that the Mentos?
No. Big Me was the Mentos one. Learn to Fly was the one that had the band
flying on a plane.
But they're playing like six different characters, or like Dave Grohl himself plays six different characters.
He Big Mama'd the thing.
He did. He totally Big Mama'd it. He Madea'd it. He clumped it. Meet the Clumps or whatever it was. Other singles from the album include Stacked Actors, Generator, Next Year, and Breakout. In 2001, the band became friends with the band Queen. They inducted Queen into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Brian May actually played guitar on their cover of Have a Cigar, and it was actually on the MI2 soundtrack. And again, so many good bands fell prey to that movie.
I'd say that movie is far, far better than Godzilla, though.
It was all John wooed up.
Oh, it absolutely was. Yeah. Slow motion fights and
Metallica fell prey to that soundtrack. Limp Bizkit fell prey to that soundtrack. Limp
Bizkit. Was there a scene in Mission Impossible 2 where a bunch of doves fly slowly?
Yeah, something there was. It was he walked into a church, I think.
Oh, yes, like an abandoned church.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was the wooiest of the woo scenes that had ever been wooed.
Wow. Well done. Before this album was recorded, the band was on the brink of breaking up. But after taking some time to tour and regroup, they went back into the studio to re-record almost everything that they had done before the tour. The original version of this album, which the band calls the Million Dollar Demos, have never been released entirely. There have been some leaked fragments, but nothing official. In 2002, they released the album One by One. The singles included All My Life, Times Like These, Low, and Have It All. That at Times Like These, by the way, there's a great cover of that by Glenn Campbell, which is just heartbreaking considering, you know, the state that Glenn Campbell was entering into when he recorded that. For most of its history, the band chose to stay away from the political realm. However, in 2004, upon learning that George W. Bush's presidential campaign was using Times Like These at rallies, Grohl decided to lend his public support to John Kerry's campaign. There's no way of stopping the president playing your song, so I went out and played it for John Kerry's people instead, where I thought the message would kind of make more sense. Grohl attended several Kerry rallies and occasionally performed solo acoustic sets. The entire band eventually joined Grohl for a performance in Arizona, coinciding with one of the presidential debates. Unfortunately, didn't pan out. 2005, they came out with the album In Your Honor. This was a two-disc set split between an acoustic set and a heavier set of music. I really, really enjoyed this. The singles were Best of You, DOA, Resolve, and No Way Back, Cold Day in the Sun. They co-headlined a tour with previous Soundography subject, Weezer. And then the next year, they released their first live CD, Skin and Bones, which was a 15-song collection recorded over three nights. In 2007, Echoes, Silence, Patience, and Grace came out. The first single was The Pretender. It topped the modern rock charts for 19 weeks. The second single was Long Road to Ruin. And then Let It Die, Cheer Up, and Boys. Cheer Up, Boys. Your Makeup is Running were released as singles. 2009 saw the release of the Greatest Hits album. It featured two new songs, Word Forward and the single Wheels.
Yeah, always, if you're a band, when you release a Greatest Hits album, always stick at least one new song on there so people who are avid collectors have to buy it.
Yep, it totally works. It makes me, you know, if it's a band I'm a fan of, usually think, all right, a Greatest Hits album. Finally, I can sit back for this release and not have to buy it. And then you see that there's a new track on there. It's like, ah, crap. Or it's even an old track that they've redone or something. Mm-hmm. In 2011, the album Wasting Light came out. This was produced by Nevermind producer Butch Vig, who's also a member of Garbage. This was recorded in Grohl's garage using only analog equipment. Rope was the first single from this album. April of 2011, they released an album of covers called Medium Rare as a Record Store Day exclusive, which I went out and bought, and it's awesome.
Okay, so
yes,
that year they won the Grammy for Best Heavy Metal Performance.
Cool, very appropriate.
They were nominated against Dream Theater.
Oh,
Dave Grohl actually made a comment and said here, I feel so bad for the Dream Theater guys because they actually had a metal performance, but we didn't, but it's awesome. That's kind of the coolest song we've ever written.
Oh, too bad. And is that the only time that Dream Theater, I guess it's the only time they'd ever been nominated as a heavy metal.
They've been nominated twice. They got nominated for On the Backs of Angels for one album, and the next album they got nominated again. They were nominated twice in a row, and both times they didn't get it.
Oh. I mean, I guess, you know, the Grammy Awards is limited to a two-hour show, so having Dream Theater. Here's a clip from the Dream Theater nominee.
And that's actually the thing that they commented on was the song runs. Like, it's the Backs of Angels is the one they lost with, and that song runs like 8.5 minutes or something. It's not short.
Yeah. Oh, really? Wow. No surprise there. Wasting Light debuted at number one on the Billboard Top 200. And other singles from the album included Walk, Arlandria, These Days, and Bridge Burning.
Arlandria.
Along with the album, they released a band documentary called Back and Forth, which chronicled the band's career from its start until this point in time. Have you watched that?
No, I did not. I did not have a chance to dig that out and watch it.
I wonder if it's streaming anywhere. I'll have to look for that. Also this year in 2011, they performed at BlizzCon. And this was a year I did not make it to BlizzCon, and I'm bummed. I really would have loved to have seen them live. I think
So now we've covered two BlizzCon bands now. Weezer and these guys.
Well, we did Muse too. And Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh my gosh. This is like some kind of weird subgenre.
I know. I didn't even think about the fact that so many of them, like the only ones we haven't done are Tenacious D and
Metallica. We got to cover Metallica.
We got to cover Metallica and Blink. Well, we don't have to cover Blink 182. Well, maybe we will at some point.
We could do it as a genre show. We've mentioned them a bunch.
There we go. In 2014, they came out with the album Sonic Highways. This was released to accompany Grohl's miniseries of the same name. Eight songs were written and recorded in eight studios in eight different American cities. The series shows them doing this as they try to capture the history and feel of each town for the song dedicated to that area. That's brilliant. That's a really, really cool. Cool project. In May of 2015, they were the last band to play on the David Letterman show. Yeah, David Letterman has always been a big fan and friends with Dave Grohl. And so it made so much sense to have him on there.
And we actually brought them up just a couple episodes ago with the Zac Brown when they covered War Pigs.
They did. Yep. Yes, Black Sabbath, right. While on tour, Dave Grohl broke his leg. We talked about this at the beginning of the show with Joe. And he continued to perform on a custom-built throne that he claimed to have designed while he was on painkillers in the hospital. And this thing is amazing. Like, it hovers around and moves, and he doesn't have to sit there in one single solitary place while the rest of the band is playing. He kind of moves around a little bit in this thing. It's really, really cool.
So do you think he had the joystick to control it, or do you think a roadie had a remote control?
I think a roadie had a remote control because... you'd see him, you know, even holding guitar for part of it or doing something where I don't think it would have been as easy for him to control and do what he was doing at the same time.
Okay, so that brings up the idea that whoever had that control, he must have trusted implicitly.
You'd have to, right? Because it's like, you don't want to end up like Mrs. Deagle on the dumbwaiter in Gremlins. One of my favorite parts of Gremlins. Deagle. In November 2015, they released a free EP called Saint Cecilia. And then Grohl announced an indefinite hiatus. This led to rumors of him leaving the band. A fake documentary was released in March of 2016 that he was going to go into electronic music and that Nick Lachey was going to be the new frontman for the band. I love it.
I laughed really hard when I read
that. I'm sure you did. Yeah, that's hilarious. Nick Lachey, frontman for Foo Fighters. In 2017, they released Concrete and Gold. They didn't break up. They didn't disappear. Just took a little hiatus. That was all they needed. They did that before, so they did it again. Concrete and Gold came out. Longtime touring keyboard player Rami Jaffe was brought in as a full member. And Run was the first single released ahead of the album. It topped the rock charts. So for Wasting Light, they had Walk, and then Concrete and Gold, they had Run. So their next single will be called Sprint.
And the Ventures had Walk, Don't Run.
Wow. Yes, they did. The Sky is a Neighborhood.
They also did Sleepwalk, didn't they?
No, that was Johnny Santo, or Santo and Johnny.
I know they did a cover of it. I mean, the Ventures covered everything.
Oh, they did. So. Yeah, they totally did. The Sky's a Neighborhood and The Line were also singles released from this album. And Justin Timberlake, Sean Stockman, and Paul McCartney guest appeared on this album. And before we jump
into the next thing, I just want to say, though, that Dave Grohl has helped so many other bands.
Oh, he really has.
It's kind of helped his reputation and credibility in the rock community because he's helped like bands like Ghost. He's helped Zac Brown. He's a big fan of music. He's a big fan of rock and roll. And he does what he can to help other people get their foothold and kind of get what they need to try to be successful.
By all accounts and all appearances, Dave Grohl seems like one of the nicest guys in rock and roll. Like one of the most down-to-earth, genuine guys. Like there's no pretentiousness or any sort of like putting on airs or posing, posturing, any of that stuff. He seems like just a genuinely nice guy.
He's one of the people that I would love to interview at some point.
Oh, that'd be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, let's talk about their statistics and general notes. Take it away, Hammond.
Four of their albums have won Grammys for Best Rock Album. Again, one of them was beating out Dream Theater. And so I'm gonna continue to bang that drum a little bit.
People are gonna get drunk on this episode, man.
And the other little thing I wanted to bring up is that they've sold 12 million albums just in the U.S. Oh, wow. I could not find any worldwide numbers, but I'm sure it's pretty staggering. Yeah. And when you think of a band that hasn't been around all that long, it's pretty impressive.
It totally is. I think it's testament to just how solid a rock band Foo Fighters are. I compared them earlier in the show when we had Joe on to being a classic rock band that's not classic rock, but they are just as rock and roll as Led Zeppelin and AC/DC and you name it. They are just as rock and roll as some of those bands that have been around for decades. And I think that just is support for what a solid rock band they are.
And the one thing I can say too is that when they are on stage performing, and I haven't seen them live, but I've watched videos on YouTube or wherever, and it seems like they're genuinely having a good time. Like there's not the feeling that they're going through the motions when they're performing live. Yeah. And they might, but they're not letting the audience catch on to the fact that they
doubt. And
which is the key to a good performance.
And watching their music videos, I mean, there is no more fun to be had than watching Foo Fighters music videos because they have fun with it. Even the ones that are like more serious, like Walking After You or The Best. It just looks like they're having fun filming videos. Maybe not as much fun as they look like they're having in Big Me and Learn to Fly and some of the stuff like that. But man, they look like they're having a blast. All right. So let's say you get to see Foo Fighters and let's say you were at BlizzCon 2011 and you're looking around and you're saying, wow, where's Brian Ibbett? I wish he were here. But you, you're watching the band and you're guaranteed to hear one particular song. What is their Stairway to Heaven?
Well, if they were at BlizzCon playing, my figure would be that they'd probably do the theme to Stormwind as their Stairway to Heaven song.
You know what? It's funny. None of the bands that I've seen have done anything World of Warcraft specific. And you would think out of any of them, like Weird Al Yankovic, you would think it would have written a song, specifically World of Warcraft parody song. But he didn't. So that is kind of surprising.
No, so my list is made out of Everlong, My Hero, Learn to Fly, and Monkey Wrench.
And you say Monkey Wrench. I like Everlong as a Stairway to Heaven song for them. It's such a great song. And if it weren't a greatest hit, then that would have been on my list. But let's see what their statistics are. You're probably going to be right because you're always right. Oh, I'm right.
Hello, I've waited here for you.
Everlong performed 1,017 times in concert. Monkey Wrench, second place, but by almost 100 times less. Everlong is like far and away their biggie. Monkey Wrench, My Hero, This Is a Call, Learn to Fly, Times Like These, All My Life, Breakout, Big Me, which I'm surprised. I would have thought they wouldn't want to do that as much. Although it's interesting, Big Me in ninth place is just a little over half as many times performed as Everlong, which is surprising. I mean, that means they've done some shows where maybe they just come out and do like four or five songs and it's those top four or five. And then if they have more time, they do stuff like Big Me, Best of You, The Pretender, Cold Day in the Sun.
Do they play a lot of festivals? Because they do have truncated sets on festivals. Yeah,
that might be it. The biggest the highest performed cover that they do is Under Pressure by Queen, which is surprising because to my knowledge, they've never released that as a studio track. And you think they would.
And I'm also surprised they haven't covered Ice Ice Baby then.
Oh, really? Is that one that they've done?
That's Pressure.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's the dun dun. No, Hammond, it's different. Because, you know, Queen's version goes dun 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 dun. And Vanilla Ice's version goes dun 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 dun. Did you ever see that?
I did. And I am so glad you picked up on what I was throwing across the plate, because I was really hoping that you knew that.
Yes. Oh, geez. Breakdown, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, another cover that they do. Gas Chamber by Angry Samoans. In the Flesh by Pink Floyd. That's a cool one. I'd love to hear him do that as a studio track. Under My Wheels by Alice Cooper. Tie Your Mother Down by Queen. See, again, it's... I wonder if they did that... That Tie Your Mother Down and Under Pressure, maybe as part of their induction into with the Rock and Roll fame. Like, who did Queen pull in as a vocalist when they got inducted? Do you know?
I don't know. Didn't Terrence Trent D'Arby sing with them for a short time? Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Before they brought in Adam Lambert. Before they
brought in Adam Lambert and the guy from Bad Company, Paul Rogers. Who else? I mean, they've had a lot of people.
Adam Lambert's been with them for quite a while, though.
Still, and he's going to be the one doing the residency, the Vegas residency with them.
Mm-hmm. Wait, was D'Arby with them or was he with NXS?
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. You were absolutely right. D'Arby was with NXS. But
yeah,
Trent D'Arby leading Queen be? Man, that would be awesome. Man.
He'd take him to the wishing well.
Get all funky. All right. Speaking of covers... who would we like to hear them cover? And I gave some thought to this one. I'll be honest. I would love to hear them do the Baby Shark theme because I think it'd be really, really cool. And I almost put that here because I could hear, because it would begin with Dave Grohl going, like the guitar, Baby Shark, Baby Shark. And then it would like, Baby Shark, like it would, that's how it would go. I almost want to just change my... No, I'm going to keep what I had. So a sister alt-rock band, Soul Asylum, around several years longer than the Foo Fighters, but had that big hit with Runaway Train. I would love to hear Dave Grohl cover Runaway Train. Because again, they've covered everyone, as you have in your notes here. They have. They've covered absolutely everyone. And that would be a great one for them to put their own spin on would be Runaway Train.
Mine, a little bit more, I don't know, predictable.
Maybe a little.
If he feels so bad about the Grammy, then he should cover Pull Me Under by Dream Theater.
That'd be great.
Make it up for him. Prove it.
Let's see how bad you feel. Let's see you do a 9-minute track by Dream Theater. That's cool. Is Pull Me Under one of their
that is the hit.
Okay.
Like if you look at, like I gave you their greatest hits the album.
Track on there.
It's actually called Dream Theater's Greatest Hit in 21.
Right. Yeah. You're right. All right. Well, now let's get to our playlist. And they have had, Foo Fighters have released a couple of greatest hits albums. The one I'm looking at is the one that looks like it's on the side of an airplane. I'm just looking to see. I think I'm safe. Yeah, I think I'm safe. I mean, Everlong, that would have been in my list, but I obviously couldn't include that one in here. First one, though. Glad to see it's not on their greatest hits album. It's Walking After You, which is on The Color and the Shape. Tonight I'm tangled in my blanket of clouds. Dreaming aloud. Things just won't do without you. This actually might be... It's between this or Everlong is my favorite Foo Fighters song. I love the song Walking After You. I don't know if it's the harmonies or it's the kind of melancholy tone that it takes, but the build up on this one is just so cool. Totally love this. My next track would be Cheer Up Boys. I think it's Cheer Up. The full title is something like Cheer Up Boys, Your Makeup Is Running. From Echoes. I needed to make sure that I included one of their rockers in my playlist. This one was one of my favorites. It's just such an upbeat major key tune, but it's so cool. And it's followed on the album Echoes by a song called Summer's End. Like these two are back to back. Can I have my two songs on my playlist be back to back? Of course I can. No reason I can't. Summer's End is the one after Cheer Up Boys. And this feels like a Neil Young song that's been totally modernized. Love it. Number four on the list is finally a cover. It's Joe Walsh's Life of Illusion. Is the last track on the One by One album. It was stuck on the end there. And it's a perfect showcase of that disconnected vocal style that Foo Fighters can have. It's what Joe Walsh does on every track, because that kind of whatever. I just happen to be here. This is a song I happen to be able to sing, and I'm singing it kind of thing.
That disinterested Joe Walsh.
It totally is. Like you figure, you know, Joe Walsh loves rock and roll, but you do feel like, I'll come record a track today. Whatever. I don't have anything else going on. It's kind of what I feel like.
I got a nooner at the golf course. Exactly. So let's hit this track and get out of here.
Does. It's, you know, that's what this song needed to be covered well. And it was covered very, very well. And I think in a surprise to absolutely nobody included on the list, this will be Our Year. I had listed as a favorite track when the Zombies did it. I listed as a favorite track for somebody else that covered it that we talked about. And I'm putting it here.
That's right. I made fun of it. Like they didn't. Goods,
I know,
song.
And you can make fun of it again, but I don't care. This was on that medium rare. Listen, I waited out in line outside the record store on record store day in 2011 or whenever it was, and picked this one up and the cover singles. And this was my happiest purchase of the day is the medium rare album.
The way you held me up when I was down, and I won't forget the way you said, darling, I love you. You gave me faith to go on. Now we're there, and we've only just begun. This will be our year.
My Foo Fighters is so cool. It's all covers, man. How could I go wrong? And that's coming up here in about a month. April 13th is going to be Record Store Day. Do you go to those, by the way?
I try to. It was hard for me when I was working regular jobs. Now, though, I probably will have much more ability to go.
Because you guys have Gray Whale out there, which is such it's the perfect shop for record store day.
I freaking love Gray Whale. Gray Whale CD. Check them out if you live in Utah.
Wish we had those here. Anyway, this will be Our Year. That is my fifth track and completing my playlist. Hammond, tell me about your playlist.
All right. So I started with the cover. In fact, I claimed this.
You peed on this spot on the ground before I could even do anything about it. So
I did the same thing for next week.
Did you really? Yeah. I'm looking ahead now. If you picked the Hill Street Blues theme, man. Oh, okay, good. No, you can have that one.
All right. So my first one I picked was Baker Street. Now, I love the original song. I have very fond memories associated with the original song by Jerry Rafferty.
Mm-hmm.
I loved when The Simpsons riffed on it with Lisa playing saxophone. Oh, yeah,
right.
I did a cover in college where I played harmonica over the sax part instead of the, you know, and
band note. Did. That's cool.
I
could just hear it.
So I really enjoyed the Foo Fighter. Whoop, I meant their cover. Nah. There's one. I slipped up. I was going to say the cover of it.
I know, it's hard. It was, which would have been appropriate, the Foo Fighter, because the Foo Fighter is the modifier, cover is the noun. Yeah.
Yes, but it still came out sounding like the Foo Fighter. So I'll own it. But I enjoy their cover of it immensely. Then the next one I picked was Wind Up from Color and Shape. I wonder when they talk about The Shape if they're talking about Michael Myers.
What?
Because Michael Myers is referred to as a shape.
Michael Myers? Are you talking about the actor or the Halloween murderer?
The Halloween monster. The guy from Halloween. Referred to as
the shape. Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's the shape. So every time I see that title, I'm always wondering if they're talking about Mike Myers. Not Mike. Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a tangent for you.
Reminds me I need to watch Halloween. Each time I hear about the hand you've been dealt, family confession is confession to sell. Maybe I'll fall behind, I don't mind, cause I had enough. All sorts of devil, like animal life. Hope you never see me wind up. So Wind Up, this is one of their, this seems to be his rundown of complaining musicians. He seems to be just going after all kinds of musicians and for all the silly things they say. And it was a fun song. It shows that he's kind of self-aware of his own industry. You know, I'm such a lyrics guy and I didn't pick up on that. I need to go check that out apparently.
Yeah, it was pretty good. The next one I picked was Disenchanted Lullaby from One by One. Captures the loneliness in relationships. The track creates a strange hypnotic atmosphere. It's got a psychedelic, repetitive guitar, and then he's got these echoing vocals over the top. So it sounds very different from a lot of the songs they do, but I really, really enjoyed it.
That's cool.
The next one, number four, is The Deepest Blues Are Black, and that's from Honor. Tell me true. I think you know. This uses just one of a couple. Oh, okay. We need to talk about the musical tropes. Yeah.
I've been waiting. I mean, I talked about a little bit when I was talking about the cover, but.
So he's got a few of musical tropes that he kind of falls into that are very stylistically unique to Foo Fighters and Dave Grohl. One of them is the quiet verse and the loud chorus, and then a little bit louder verse, and then a loud chorus. And at the end, it's loud verse, loud chorus. Yeah. That's one of them. And there are a couple of chord progressions that are very, very, very much Foo Fighter-y chord progressions. And I can't describe them without singing, and nobody wants me to do. But once you heard it four or five times, you're like, that's a Foo Fighter chorus, chord progression right there. And like I said earlier in the show, he's got as many, his well of tropes is deep. It's not like he reuses the same two or three every time. But when you get used to hearing them, he's got as many and they're as recognizable as Alan Parsons' tropes are.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, this is still a great song. Deepest Blues Are Black. This is like a textbook Foo Fighter song. I really enjoyed it. And it stood out as one that I wanted to keep.
And that whole album. The Honor album, In Your Honor, I think was really, really good. Really like the comparison, the one album acoustic or the one, one side acoustic, one side studio.
Yeah. I also think we like Color and Shape a lot too, based on our pick. Also One by One. We've got a bunch of songs from One by One on there too. My number five song is Lonely As You from One by One.
Spare all the preaching, my secret's worth keeping. No one understands like I do. Keep out of reach, I'm your leading deletion.
This song kind of stands out as unique in their entire discography. It's got a different sound. It's got a different kind of harmony structure. It's got kind of a different structure in general. And when I heard it, I'd heard so many things that were kind of similar that when I this came on, it made my ears perk up. And it wasn't just kind of the same thing. It was new and interesting. Yeah, and made me listen.
It's one that was so perfect, or so, I don't know what the word is, but I mean, it was so different from what I'd been hearing that it was the first thing that I went and did was come in here to put it in there and realize that you already had it in there. Already beaten me to it.
That's one of the perks of doing notes.
You know what? You earned it. You absolutely earned it. I'm fine with that.
You've heard the perks of a wallflower.
I've got the perks of a note taker. Soundography note taker. Very good. Yeah. Awesome. Well, that is that's our Foo Fighters episode. I really enjoyed. I did enjoy this week. I don't want to make it sound like it was too repetitive or dull. You know, they do a lot of things really, really well, and they do a lot of things frequently. Mm-hmm. But those are things I like, so I don't mind hearing them over and over.
Yeah, and I'll say I really enjoyed it too. This was a good week. I came in knowing their top four, five, six songs. I didn't know much about them. Coming out of it, I know a lot more about them, and I really appreciate him as a person as well as them as musicians.
Just awesome. He's just a really cool dude. Dave Grohl, if you're out there, we love you. You know who else we love is Mike Post. Mike Post. He is the subject of our next episode of Soundography, or I should say the works of one Mike Post.
So this is a weird pick for us because he's mostly known for
he's TV almost theme songs. Exclusively known for TV theme songs.
He's prolific with them. Believe me, he's a lot to cover. We figured we kind of do something different.
I like where we're going with this. It's going to be fun to do this week. And I've already, once I saw the ones that you marked in there, I'm like, oh, I better lay claim to a couple that I know are favorites of mine. So I may have added something already to my playlist that I know I'm going to pick.
Wow.
Well, I just picked two.
Yeah. You're like 33% of the way done.
But those are two of my favorites. And one of them I didn't even realize was Mike Post. Which one will it be? Which one are we talking about? Oh my gosh. Let's see if we can find out next week.
It's the second one.
It is. I had no idea. That was him. Hey, you should email us. You, with the things to say to us, with the ideas, the thoughts, the questions, the concerns. You right there, you know who you are. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. Or if you don't like that long form email thing and you're like hip and cool and only, you know, do technology that's been introduced in the last 10 years, well, then you should do Twitter. We're at the Soundography. Our website is soundography.com. You'll find all of our previous episodes of the show there, along with notes, show notes, and links to all the stuff we do. There's playlist links in there with our Spotify playlist. You'll find links to buy the songs, as well as a link to support the show. You can be a supporter of the show like Joe and make us listen to something with Patreon, patreon.com/soundography. Of course, if you just want to leave us a review, that's a free way to show your love. It's a free way. It's a way that is free to show your love. Wherever you get your podcast, leave a review for Soundography. Until the Mike Post rears its ugly head. That sounds mean.
Yeah. He's got an ugly head.
I don't know what his head looks like, but it's full of TV themes. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Evans saying we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.